don't know if anyone has anything on their mind, but I guess you could ask me a question if you really don't want me to talk. But I figured I had a topic. Does anybody mind? Okay, so I have an interesting topic that I'd like to discuss. And maybe you can even do some of the work. It's really fascinating. You have kids who naturally, you know, always want to dive and always want to learn. The kids are running to the front of the line, they want to learn extra. But then you have what we call the majority. And let's say they're not turned on. That's the topic. And what to do. So I just want to start with one chazal. I'm sorry. David, can I trouble you? I just put the bereshis, the red bereshis on my office table. No, in the office. Yeah, right there. You just bring it. No, just the red chumash. So, we know at the beginning of last week's parasha, it says, and I quote, "So v'yetze Yaakov, v'yivka mokom yomen shom, v'yachlom, v'ni Hashem, u'tzavartza, v'ni anochi yimcha." V'yikatz Yaakov mishnaso. Just a Derek Hago, I got to tell you this. Every time I get this post, I got to tell you a funny story. So when I was branching in... yeah, just say, "Alexa, please lower the AC."
"Alexa, please lower the AC."
Well, you got to wait for... Yeah.
"Sorry, I didn't find this."
Yeah, wait.
Try it again.
"Alexa,
no way.
Please lower the AC."
"Sorry, I didn't find this."
Say lower 2 degrees.
Lowered 4 degrees.
"Lower the air conditioning 4 degrees.
Sorry, I didn't
come here." "Just say 4 degrees. Lower 4 degrees.
We're doing this manual."
"Let's say
Kobe. That's right.
Who's Kobe? You have to talk to him in third person. It's like a version of Shiva.
I did it, man.
Kobe.
Alexa,
I'm
going to
punch you in the face.
Now I know I
must
have hit the rock.
Anyway, so I was branching in New Haven, and my good friend, I can't tell you his whole name because I can't say for sure he would be mocking on the story, but my good friend Yaakov, I can't say his last name, was the Balkari. It's a good story to say since Shmuel's in the room. And he was the Balkari. And Shabbos afternoon, it was Pashas by Yetze, Shabbos Mincha, and he wasn't there. He was up in the dorm, which was on the second floor. Nobody was in the mood to go get him. Sleeping, it'll take him a while. I have to go to the bathroom first, Shabbos afternoon, winter, you know, like it was short, so he was probably puffing away. And we wanted to daven mincha, so we got someone up there to forelane, which is always torturous for everyone. And grudging through this kriya. And then after like the first Leah, my good friend Yaakov, can't say his last name, walks in. And in the middle, since we had no one laning, he just took over. And the first pasuk he read was "Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso." His mom is the first pasuk, and the place cracked up, Bamish laughing. Of course, the next pasuk was "Vayashkem Yaakov Babo." Okay, it was very funny. But anyway, so then it says "Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso." So Yaakov got up. "Vayomer Achen Yesh Hashem Amokam Azev Nochlo Yadati." I see there's God in this place, and I didn't know. So Sfarno says, what do you mean he didn't know? Vanochli Adati. Sfarno says, because had I known, the purpose here is not to say the shmooze, even though this is like such an awesome shmooze, but Had I known, I would have prepared myself for Nevuah. That's what the Tefarnos says. But if you look at Rashi over here, I don't know exactly which pasuk, but Rashi says that Yaakov had just finished 14 years learning in Shiva Shem. And Rashi says during that time, that 14 years, very unusual, Yaakov did not sleep. In the 14 years he was in Yeshiva Shem, he did not sleep. He learned straight 14 years. And then came the parasha Vayetze. And he says, like, had he known he was coming to Nevuah, he would have prepared himself for Nevuah. He had just learned for 14 years straight without any sleep. What exactly would he have done differently to prepare for this Nevuah? I mean, is there anything greater, anything better? So the great shmooze I heard from my Rebbe, Zatzal, Rabbi Neiman, Shmuel Neiman, Zatzal, he said the story. You can't ask a kashya on the shmooze. It's not for that purpose. So the he's like salivating already. So the shmooze that Rabbi Neiman said was that you see that as much as you think you're growing, you could always grow more. He could have pushed himself more. He did. He pushed him hard, but had I had such an, I can see Nevuah, he would have pushed himself even more. Okay, so that's the point here, that he was really, you know, a person could grow even more. So, okay, let's assume, how should a Rebbe, or probably be a parent also, it doesn't have to be a Rebbe, but how do we set up a culture that is conducive for a kid to grow? So I thought what we would do is take a couple minutes, because there's not an answer, but I thought what would be a good idea is if everyone would pair up with the, I guess we'll start from Mendy. That's Mendy and Moshe, Natan and Shlomo. Dovi and David, Shmuel and David, and Matan and I, to pair up and come up with one strategy. If you were setting up an environment, you could decide whether you're the principal or the Rebbe, or if it's a home situation, however you want to do it. We'll go around them afterwards. Is someone going to take notes? I see you have notes. Will you take notes afterwards? It'll be on the recording also, but we may come up with some very good ideas. Come up with an idea, and you could put yourself in this, like, if you were a kid, what would you consider a environment that was conducive for growth? What would make the kid want to daven? You know, I guess in your answer, when you're talking to your partner, you know, first establish what the scenario is, so that when you go around, they're not going to be all the same. Oh, the kid's in fifth grade, the kid's in eighth grade, the kid's in 11th grade. It's a home. So what do you do with your kids when they're younger? Father taking his kid to shul. How do you set up a environment of growth? That's the question. Okay, let's give ourselves, we need time to process the answers. Let's give ourselves about five minutes to come up with an answer, and then we'll go around and we'll share. Okay. Okay, Matan, you're on my. You may want to shut up, Mendy. If you want, you can pause it for 5 minutes. Alexa. Okay. Okay, let's go around the room, see if we can get some answers, then we'll send these answers into the Torah Masorah Convention or the Chinuch Roundtable and discuss, because I think every environment has to deal with this issue. What's the best way to create a proper environment? I guess that really is ideal to have it. If a person knows the tricks and how to set it up, that would be the best. So, okay, so which group wants to go first? Okay, if no one's volunteer, we have to go in order. Okay, Moshe and Mendy.
Each one you're last. So, I'm going to be honest, it's kind of more fun to listen to Nathan than to but, yeah, it's
In between.
Second grade. You gotta make some program where the whole thing is they're doing something extra. You know, not like just always under the rules that they have to. And you can be enthusiastic about it, and then they just get like kind of homeless about them being enthusiastic about going.
So, for example, on Sunday, everything was optional. They had the third grade and up. Had this Bishnai's kickoff event. It's not a school mandated program. It's really amazing what they do. They have for 4 months in the school. You realize like it's so ridiculous. And the school sends out this thing. We're having a kickoff father and son brunch. Fathers can learn with their kids. It's a 4 month program. Everyone should learn with their fathers, and we kick it off today. And all the fathers come and learn with their sons. At 200 people there learning, and then they go into the dining room, and they have a whole brunch. And then Rabbi Shapiro came and spoke. You know, it was classic Rabbi Shapiro, inspiring speech. And then, four months from now, there's going to be another one. This they usually do at the elementary school. They make a siyum. What's the siyum? They make a siyum, and there's no learning. Just see him. All the fathers come with the sons. Father and son see him. Everyone comes to the son. And someone gets up and, you know, speaks again. And someone make a see him. Everyone else, and they all celebrate. And they dance. And you know, they learn with their fathers probably like seven times the whole time. They did seven Mishnayos or whatever. But they make this whole see him. Like, you know, if you're making a see him, fine. But otherwise, it's the see him of the whole thing. So they came to the see him. So it's all very exciting. Event, and it does get the fathers to learn with the boys, not just Motzei Shabbos, that these Avos Habanim program, but their fathers learn with their sons. Hey, the ones who really push, well, I guess they can learn it the rest of the year also. Like, they almost don't need the yeshiva, but I suspect this idea is what you guys are saying, that they came up with an optional something to get all excited about. Kids, you know, they'll remember like they went to learn with the father. It wasn't mandatory. Has nothing to do with school, other than the school helped organize it. And they did it on a Sunday, so they got out of school by doing this event. And then the culmination was like a whole another party, more pizza and dancing, and made a whole big thing about it. I think the idea is they're trying to get fathers to learn with their sons. Yeah, school can only do so much, they do, but it's much more meaningful a father that learns with his son. And they're trying to get the kid to want to learn with his father. You know, the Avos Habanim, no one have anything against the Avos Habanim program. Cover it. Kid doesn't have to. The father can learn only a little bit with him, not a lot of it with him. Anyway, that's the idea you guys sing, right? Something like that. Find something optional that's not mandatory that the kid wants to do. Not necessarily father and son, but just whatever. It's an optional thing. I mean, you're not going to get 100% participation, l'chora, but whatever. You keep trying. You know, different strokes for different folks. Okay, that's the idea. Okay, very good.
And what's Pshat in that case with
So you know sometimes you could have a I remember one of the made a Roshim on me. There was they were raising money for Magen Adom, what's it called? Well, the Red Cross in Israel, I don't know what it's called. And there was a bunch of, you know, I don't think it was high school seniors. I think it was like, I went, but I think the people who were participating were like first year, second year college, you know, from college guys who were in college, you know. I don't think they were any of these matters. They were just looked like Brooklyn College guys. So I remember I went because they had a basketball-thon. And they were having people play. It was winter, and they were playing for 24 hours. They had like a bunch of they were gonna play for 24 hours straight basketball, and they had, I don't know, 24 people signed up, so they were gonna have, you know, rotations of people playing, but everyone was gonna be there for 24 hours straight. So they slept probably a whole Shabbos, and Motzoi Shabbos from 7, I think it was going from 7 p.m. to 7 p.m. So I went. I remember I was a little kid, I was 10, 12 years old, and I was so excited about this. Ah, they're raising money for Tzedakah, and they're gonna, you know, play. I never heard of someone, the Shavuos night, I heard of it, but I never actually saw the practice. I went, I remember, so one of my siblings took me, and I went to watch these guys play. I wanted to go twice. I went once Motzoi Shabbos, and I went once Sunday night, and I saw like one guy like had a beard. Like I said, I was laughing so hard. Like, wow, he started without a beard, and he ended up with a beard. I remember laughing so hard. But I remember when I, my first, was my first, second, my third year as a Rebbe. So we wanted to, I wanted to encourage my students. I was teaching eighth grade, and they were telling me that they all like watch so much television. Believe it or not, nowadays we would gladly trade all their devices and give them their television, you know. But that was the big Nisayan television. There was no internet, and we were trying to encourage them to not watch television. So I made a deal with them. You know, what would you guys would you consider for the right prize to experiment not watching television for a month? So I said, a month? I think they asked for a day. So I said, what would we get if we go from if we don't watch for a month? So now at the time, the school had never gone on a trip further than Orlando, never. The ship, when I came, the ship was like 10 years old. So they'd never gone on any kind of trip. So I said, you know, if you do this, we'll go to Atlanta for a Shabbos. Now, it had never been done before. And of course, the whole Nohain Beach has gone to Atlanta now. But my goal was, I wanted to recruit. That was my goal. And the nearest city, well, the nearest state is Georgia. I mean, Cuba's closer, but I'm talking about, and was Georgia. And I figured, why, Atlanta had no high school, no yeshiva, Masifta type high school. So we go to Atlanta, I'll take all the guys there, and it was like it's like automatic recruiting, because they're there, so we'll be there. So I arranged this trip. We couldn't afford it. The yeshiva was broke. The yeshiva is like oozing with money compared to, and we're broke now. Okay, they were so broke, we could not afford milk, money to buy milk, I remember. So how are we going to get to pay for it? I couldn't get any very cheap. I couldn't get any money to pay for anything. So I had to raise the money myself. How am I raise money? So I said, oh, we're going to have, I thought to myself, we're going to have a basketball thon. I remembered the story. We're going to make this basketball thon. It's possible for yeshiva to do it. So I was going to do it. How about if we learn half the night and we play basketball half the night? The guys will be interested in that. And then as I was talking to the guys more, I said, you know, why don't we just learn? We'll get people to sponsor. And why should we learn all night? Let's pick one day that we'll just learn for like 5 hours, 4 or 5 hours, and you'll get sponsors to sponsor your learning. That sounds like Kavadik, and we'll do it. So I remember the first year we did it, so we called, that was the first Learnathon. This was 1998, 97, first Learnathon. I was ready to, I thought we'd raise like $1,500, $2,000. I think we needed $4,000 for our budget. And we ended up raising like $5,000 because the guys were all pumped. And we went to Atlanta. We made a big splash over there. I remember we went in front of the Beth Jacob Synagogue there, and a couple of girls came over to a couple. I wasn't there at the minute, obviously, as you hear from the story. And a couple of girls came over to a couple of our guys and wanted to, you know, drum up some business. And one of my Talmidim looked around and said, "I'm sorry, we don't talk to girls." And so these girls just like turned around and walked away. And then the two boys came running over to me. I was inside by a kiddush. Shabbat, you won't believe what just happened. I can't believe I said that. I'm such an idiot. I said, "Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. That's a great story. It's such a kiddush Hashem." And then I was at this kiddush. One of the Baal Batim comes over to me, who I didn't know. I said, "You were a Paladin?" I said, "Yeah." "You from Miami?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "Are you here with this group?" He says, "Yeah." He says, I got to tell you this story. So yesterday, you were at Torah Day School. So Friday morning, I knew Rabbi Rosenbaum, Rabbi Colin Rosenbaum. He's a very chashuv mekanech. I think he retired and moved to Eretz Yisrael. And he was really a geshmak yid, you know. So we went to his school, and he spoke to us. And I told him, "Hey, what you're doing here?" I said, "Well, they didn't learn much television for a month." And so this Baal Bus says, my daughter told me, it was a boys' school and a girls' school. It wasn't co-ed, but it was, you know, different sides of the hallway, out of town, you know. So he says, "My daughter told me that there's a eighth grade boys here from Miami, and they didn't watch television for an entire month, and all they got was a trip here." And so he said, you know, like, to the Atlanta kids, like, huh? They came here? Like, imagine someone from Atlanta would come to Miami, and you would say, "That's all you got was a trip here, North Miami Beach? Oh, man, you got really messed up." Just perspective on it. But that was very, very exciting. I remember one of the mothers, before I had planned the trip, was in my office. My office used to be the kitchen. And it was like a little, it was a carport that was enclosed. And, but then when we had to do some improvements on the house, so we wanted to make an upstairs, they told us that the carport not gonna hold an upstairs, so we had to knock down the carport. And once we were doing it, we put this used to be the kitchen, so we made that the kitchen, this the dining room. So I remember this mom was in that room. She came into me, was in my office, and she was speaking to me, and she says, "My kid has no excitement for Yiddishkeit." And I said, "Yeah, I knew that." He says, "Well, Rabbi, that's your job." And there's a school that a Rebbe has to give the kids excitement. Okay, now whether you agree with that or not, like, so she put that on me, and she said, "He needs to have excitement." Now, I don't care what it's for. Hopefully, I'm hoping he'll get excited about the right things. So this trip that I did, so it was like a lot of good and a lot of things. First of all, they were like, just give different, you know, specifics to Moshe Mendy's idea. So they had to get into getting people to sponsor their learning. So they had to call all their aunts and uncles that they probably never call, you know, aunts and uncles. Who are you going to call? You know, call your two neighbors, and then, what's aunt so-and-so's number? Oh, I guess I'll call them, you know. And you call your aunts and uncles, you know, you run out of grandparents really fast. And they got, you know, and everyone said, "Wow, you're learning." That, you know, people were giving them a lot of covet because they were learning. "Wow, you're learning extra." And then we were very careful. I mean, we asked a Shaila, "Can you count Mariv as part of the learning?" And then a group like Paskin, that I remember, he came into the class. It was just my class that was doing it. It wasn't the whole school then. Right then, so we had a Shaila. We wanted to take like a 10-minute break with refreshments. So can you count through our group? I said that Marev is a Chiv, that you have to have a Marev, so you can't count this part of learning. It's a separate Chiv. But if you want to learn for 5 hours, nobody, it's not humanly possible to learn for 5 hours without breathing, without the answer. That's you have to breathe, you have to look up. You can't count that minute. So remember, Kerem Gulak came into the room and he paskin that the 15-minute refreshment break does not have to be taken off the cheshbon. And they managed, they cheered, they were going to sing for He's a Jolly Good Fellow. Very good. They were so excited that the 15 minutes of break time counts as learning. He says the mamash counts as your learning time, because if that's what you need to learn, so it's because I'll bring down bitulo zui kiyumo, you need that. So you mamash count it as your learning. They were so excited. Wow, you can count your break time, like so many lessons to learn from that. Like if you're doing the right thing and then you need to take a break, so you're getting schar for the break also. That was also a very good thing. And then they didn't watch, and that was, everyone thought I was crazy. The 30 days that we chose was included in midwinter vacation. That was like really rough. But like that's, we had to plan the trip, so it just worked out that way. And they did it. It was honor system. You know,
is anything most of them actually?
I think they all did. And I mean, it was such a big deal about it. They were calling each other at night. We made rotations, and one person would do the showman. If you need a hotline, like you're going crazy, you call this number. And this, everything was people on duty. You know, we made it all. You know,
these are eighth graders.
Yeah, they were the went berserk over this. So you could make a lot of rash. You had to make a rash over that, and just, you know, just embellishing what they did there. You could do a lot of things with optional things. That was so exciting. They never did it before. They were pioneers. And by the way, at the end of the day, you know, and then we were mocked. All the kids were wearing hats and jackets. At the end of the day, we did not ever, I think Lipschitz is the first kid from Atlanta we ever got. And, but what happened was, the following year, I got a call from someone in Atlanta. They said, you know, Rabbi, I just want to tell you something. Your boys were in Atlanta, and it convinced us that you have such fine boys. Atlanta's also entitled to have a yeshiva, and we're opening a yeshiva. They don't have to thank me, but thanks a lot. So they opened it. We got credit. Everyone knows that story. I tell everyone that we're responsible. Anyone that says they're from Ari Yisrael, which is the name of the yeshiva there, I always tell them we started that yeshiva. Thank you very much. And Cleveland, yeah, Cleveland, and Boca. Yeah.
I mean, there was only black in Atlanta that was power.
Really? That's amazing. But anyway, so that's very good. Okay, next, now for the most interesting of all the answers. Okay, Natan and Shlomo, yes. They already heard it from that. They already heard it from that time. We want to hear what it sounds like when Shlomo says it.
Everybody has to play music.
What Rashi says on that, what that means. Basically, it's very important to have like the oldest guys. Let's say we're talking about high school scenario. You have the oldest guys and then the youngest guys. The oldest guys are going to obviously be the coolest guys. The youngest guys are going to be the dumbfounded ones. Totally no clue where to go. And they're looking at direction for the oldest guys. So they see the 12th graders are shuckling and davening. Their mamash getting into it. They're getting into it. So the best way to have them affect the 9th graders is indirect hashpa, just by being merely in their presence. So we need 12th graders who are stark. So we specifically set up a program that we have 12th graders that are like the start guys, that obviously it's voluntary, and they're going to be seated in the front by the Rosh Yeshiva, scattered in the front row. And 9th graders.
Wow, this is detailed. Are you getting all this?
And 9th graders are going to be contained within that front row of the start 12th graders. And just imagine just the beginning of davening and just like, oh, good morning, just a good morning right there. You just got brownie points from that. Then also the after davening, taking off tefillin and just stuff. So right then and there, that's just davening. Indirect hashpa, which and eventually lead to big kesher. That's in terms of the scenario number one. And that's before the Rosh Hashiva, so you feel chashuv.
Scenario number two is going to be that you can have every Erev Shabbos. It has to be a set thing. Perhaps maybe once a month or a Shkodesh. You have an oneg. And you basically have someone, I don't know, playing a musical instrument or whatever it is, like Karl Bach or whatever, you just bring him back. Whatever it is, you just set something up that
Alexa.
You have.
Can you tell Alexa to play Shlomo Karlbach or Shlomo Karlbach?
Alexa, play Shlomo Karlbach.
Shuffling song by Rabbi Shlomo
Karlbach. Okay, now, it's the right backdrop.
Right, so now you have to have 12. You have to have the 12th graders, the oldest guys, the most chashev of the Hashem to be within the situation of these Bnei Torah who may be on the right or the left. Imamish, you know, Hashem's looking down at the situation and he really wants the best for his
Halakha. The oldest songs they pick while you're speaking is this song?
Oh my goodness.
At least they probably heard the word Shabbos.
No, we didn't say
again.
He just said
no, it's always recording.
No.
His name is
So somebody was listening, but I don't think it was Alexa.
No, it's always listening for the word Alexa.
That's every Friday. Oneg. It has to be an oneg. It can't just be davening simply silent. You need achenu kol beisu. You need mamish, the ruach, turf lights, candles, you know, scented candles. I don't know, something
this
like
is
that.
Every Arab Shabbos.
Right after you finish Gemara Shir, which is a half day, whatever it is, you right away set the oneg, get all the guys, and even the base medrash guys, assuming there is. Singing, just, you know, and it brings in Shabbos, which is the biggest power of the rest of the week. So you just lit the week. So, yeah.
Wow. Thank you. I have to take a deep breath. It's really spooky. I don't think they were listening. I think this Hashem was listening. Okay. Okay, next. David and Dovi. Can you shut her off, please?
Quiet.
I'm sorry.
Is it a Lachamotia thing to say thank you to Alexa?
I'll stand up for myself. You stand up for myself.
She didn't talk to girls. Let's go.
So we didn't come up with a specific concept, with a specific practical program kind of thing. We spoke about that the first thing we want to do is that the best thing to do is create an environment where everyone is environment of growth. Yes, which is then the obvious question is how do you do that?
Right.
So we figured it was something along the lines of what they were thinking. So I guess what was what you said when you go on the right path, you find friends. that it's some sort of level of choice. You make it, this is a choice that he brought up in the Rabbi Feuerman's school or something where they had an optional class and it was a high class and it was during a shiur and it was during break and for some reason everyone wanted to be in that class. And by choice, then the person chooses that this is what they're going to choose it, not because they're forced. We mentioned like tests and that kind of thing and not having them, but not necessarily specifically that, but more the concepts of it. But when they choose that this is what they're going to do, then it creates an environment of growth.
So, as you also, you're, it's a very beautiful intrinsic motivator because you're giving them opportunity to learn something extra of their choice. I guess you got to get the right time. Like if you look around, you know, people, Rabbi Feuerman always used to tell me this, that learning is innately pleasurable. It's pleasurable. And the components are...
You mean Torah, you just meant learning.
Learning.
Not necessarily Torah.
Learning, not necessarily Torah, but learning things is innately pleasurable. So you walk into a classroom and nobody's learning anything. They're there fooling around everything. So to a certain extent, if we were better teachers, I don't mean as opposed to rebellion, but the pedagogy of teaching is such that one really should be able to bring out the intrinsic joy of the learning. So, but it's very difficult to do. I'll tell you two things about that. What am I waiting for? Said they were belonging, freedom, competence, fun. Those are four human, every human wants a feeling of belonging. They want to belong to a team, belong to a group, belong to a chabura, belong to a chevra, belong to a community. That there's a need to feel that you belong. A human being was not made to just be alone in the world, and they have to belong to something. Sometimes they'll pick the craziest groups to belong to, but they're part of ISIS. You know, like that part of it is that a person feels that they're being accepted there. So some crazy people join ISIS because they just want to feel like they belong. And then there's the feeling of freedom to make a choice. So, you know, a good Rebbe or a good teacher, you know, first of all, you can make the kids feel like they're part of something special. I remember when I was a counselor for 5 years. And when I was a fifth year counselor, I was so awesome. The reason why I'm not embarrassed to sound so gaivadic, but it was more in comparison to the first 4 years as a counselor. I figured it out. By the time I was a fifth year counselor. So I came in on the first hour, all these aspiring counselors over here. So I came in on the first day, and which of course can be transferred into a classroom easily. And I said that this bunk was handpicked. And they wanted to have one bunk that was, you know, can be the model for everyone. I remember the Chaf Aleph had this big sign made, the magic of bunk Chaf Aleph. I remember sitting on the grass, the kids got off the bus, and I set up in the bunk. I set up by moving around the cubbies in a creative way. I set up a Beis Medrash in the middle of an island in the middle of the bunk, and we got Sfarim, and we're gonna get, we'll learn Mishnayos, and we found times that we could learn before lunch, like during the wash up for lunch. We're gonna get ahead of the rest of the camp. We'll have more Mishnayos learned in this bunk. They went into Mishnayos Baal Peh in those days. The whole program dropped. I don't know why. I think Klal Yisrael stopped learning Mishnayos Baal Peh, whatever. But those days it was considered very big, and they learned like a few thousand, because it, you know, things pick up. They were like revved up, and they were they were doing great in sports, and they were like thought that they really convinced them thinking that they were like the best bunk in camp. You know, I got the head lifeguard to invite them to have breakfast down at the lake. We set up, I got food from the kitchen. They put them in rowboats. They set up three rowboats for them with food. I took them out to the lake for breakfast. We had breakfast on the lake because they were such an amazing bunk. They walked around feeling that they were so special. So it's not so hard to do. I did three or four moves, and they already felt like, you know, the feeling of belonging. So it was very good, because I'm sure they themselves, some of them, I remember some of the boys, that was 1982, as this counselor. And it's so amazing, because I'm sure some of those guys are still friends, just from that. It was a three-week trip. That was the whole thing. But it's just fascinating, the feeling of belonging. Freedom is just the ability to make choice, freedom of choice. So, like, you know, a good way to do it, unless you have to give a test. So there are probably better ways to do it, but if you have to give a test, so what I figured out is that, hey, you know, you got to give a test anyway, but you want them to have freedom. Where's the freedom in a test? So, you could have picked any answer, A, B, C, or D. I gave you choices. No, but I used to do, like, you know, answer 10 out of 11. You know, it was like so easy. It just answer 10 out of 11. They feel like they could choose which ones. I did more. I was a little nice. I sometimes did 10 out of 12. I just not just one. So they could really choose which ones they know the best. And even long answers. Find ways to, you know, to give choices. And then there was the, this is the big one, competence. And I think this makes a very, very big difference. Competence. When kids learn, the teacher, the Rebbe, he has to figure out, he or she has to figure out, how the kids can walk away knowing what they learned. When a person feels that they have competence in what was just taught, they feel accomplished. That feeling of accomplishment is a feeling that is contagious. Like, you know how it is when you finish a Seder and you like really accomplish something, you feel, you know, okay, if you was like one of the, I don't know if how you're learning Bakiyas, if you did first time, you like spent an hour and a half reading Gemara in like Chinese, that may not be the best feeling, but like if you like, you finish writing over a shmooze or you finish a shir, you really understood it, it's the best feeling. That's an amazing feeling. So a teacher, a Rebbe, gives the kids that feeling. If you're going to teach a class and somebody suggested this the other day, like, were we talking about this once before with intrinsic or extrinsic motivators? Like if you're teaching trigonometry, somebody
first
said, yeah, so somebody said how they would teach trigonometry. You show them when you use trigonometry. Somebody said, I don't know if it was Asano, but someone said that you need trigonometry for air aviation. If you're doing air traffic control, you have to know trigonometry. I had no idea why, but, you know, which I don't know anything about trigonometry or air traffic control. But can you imagine going into a trigonometry class and you bring down someone from air traffic control? Do you know how riveting that is? And you get this video, now you have smart boards, and you show them like a tower, you know, the air tower, and them talking to the airplanes and air traffic control, and then you take a sentence out and you like captioned and you see what he just said, and you put, you know, sine plus cosine equal tangent. I know those are the words. And you show them that trigonometry, if you want to do air traffic control, you need to know this. When I learned trigonometry, no one told me ever, Ad Hayom, until Nassau for you, man, my new Rebbe. I think it was Nassau. No one told me why you have to know trigonometry. To me, it was like the most ridiculous waste of time. Why would you have to know, you know, trigonometry? I suffered through trigonometry, you know? Like, why am I doing this? Tangents, sines, cosines. I did know it at one point, but I didn't know why you had to know it. But can you imagine you teach them that? So like, wow, that would have done it for me. If you take an average kid, you tell them that you know this, you can be an air traffic control. We gave an aeronautics class on one of these Friday enrichment classes. There was a English teacher who was a pilot, or maybe when he was in the Army, but then in the Air Force. So he gave a Friday enrichment class. He was an English teacher, and one kid became a pilot, Jordan Frohlinger. He became a pilot from that Friday enrichment class. It's like, take the credit for that. You know, okay, good one anyway. So I'm just saying, so that, I don't know, I got it. It was, you know, Dovid and Dovid, that's what you were saying. I don't know, remember how we got onto that, but that's, I'm just trying to embellish what you said. Okay, Shmuel and Dovid.
I have mind drawn a few aspects that it's already mentioned, but everybody essentially deep down really, really wants to grow, right? However, perhaps a large portion of what holds them back from growing is their they don't know how to get there, right?
Yes.
So if you were to give them a goal, right, that not so out of their reach. It's a bit higher than when what they're used to. But if it's just a little bit out of their reach, and in addition to that, right? Because you can't do something extreme, because that's just not. They can't really see so far into the future or whatever. And so in addition to that goal, that's just a little bit out of their reach, you were to describe the process of what they need to do to get there. They won't feel so lost, and they're like, hey, I can do it. I just need to do this, this, and this. And also, once you have that system lined up for them, that'll also, it'll show them where they're holding and also highlight their successes. Like, wow, I've gotten, I don't know, through four different steps of the process. I'm only this much far away.
So, I mean, very coincidental, we were just talking about competence.
Right.
So you're saying that a large reason why guys don't feel excited or turned on is because they don't see that their accomplishment. So if you show them that you're very near it, Rabbi Grumman used to say, Dovi, could you manually or voice activate the, what do you call it, and get it cooler in here? That Torah is comparable to Shem and Zayas. There's a lot of comparisons to Torah, a lot of Mishalim, but one of the Mishalim that's given is Shem and Zayas, olive oil. Now, olive, this is Rabbi Grumman's Torah, olive oil is the sweetest oil, but olives are the most bitter fruit. You pick an olive off a tree, it's bitter. That's why olives all have to be treated. You know, they're either, you know, pickled or, you know, because the olive off the tree is, you know, no one's taking olives off the tree and serving them. They have to be cooked or something. They're just not, even the black olives, there's something to do something with them, you know. So olives are bitter, but when you squeeze an olive, the oil is the sweetest of all the oils, olive oil. So Torah is like that also. Because Torah, when you superficially, so to speak, off the tree, it's bitter. Take a little kid and you start learning Gemara, it doesn't take too long for them to be bored. You know, because they haven't tasted the sweetness, they haven't gotten into the ian of it, the essence, the sweetness of Torah is in the root, is in the understanding. The deeper you go, the sweeter it is. I guess it's okay if I tell you this, but Rabbi Moshe Lehrfeld, you know, who learns with Rabbi Hollander at night, so he was learning. The older guys know this. We was learning Rabbi Dudovitz. He's learning Rabbi Dudovitz every night. So Rabbi Lehrfeld told me that when he learned Rabbi Dudovitz, Rabbi Dudovitz had to give shir, so they had to keep moving. You know, he couldn't stay on any one sugya more than a day or two because he had to do the next osos. You know, he had to keep moving. In his ninth grade shir, there were people here who went to Rabbi Dudovitz's shir. So they had to keep moving, and he says, but you know, Rabbi Holland is not giving a shir. So he has no need to be moving. So he said, we started with like the second Rashi on Masechta, and it's 6 weeks later, we're still on that Rashi.
Whoa. We learn a long time every night.
Yeah. No, but I'm just saying, like wow, that is deep. It's deeper than deep. We got to get that song also. It's deeper than deep, higher than high, you know? And That is amazing. So, but there is truth to it that Rav Grumman used to say a lot of people regretfully they give up on Torah because it's not for them, and they stop right before, relatively age-wise and intellect-wise, just right before they tasted the sweetness of it. And if they just would have pushed a little bit more, they would have gotten to it. So, but it does take a professional. So there are some people just more adept at it, and it's very important to find the people just naturally able to, you know, tap into that sweetness, and then certain personalities, you know, tap into more easily get into it. But that's what you're saying. They give the kids a benchmark. Somehow you can show a kid what they did. I remember Dr. Bloom, who's a doctor in the community, and he used to teach Ivrit in the high school. We asked him to teach some Hebrew. So he came in. I came to the first class, about 20 boys in the class, 10th or 11th graders, and he said, okay, how many boys in this classroom have, I know exactly, I could quote exactly what he said, because he told me to listen to this, listen to my question and watch their answer. So how many boys in this class have experience with the Hebrew language? Won't get raised his hand. Yeah, yeah. I grew up about Eretz Yisrael. I grew up Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? No. So then he goes around the room. How many kids here are been in Torah Semes, you know, since kindergarten? Three, you know, 20, 18 kids raised their hand. Now they've been learning davening, Chumash, Navi, Gemara, Mishnayos, Halacha, Kitzer. They're now 11th grade. They've been learning Lashon HaKodesh. They've been learning Hebrew, you know, Judaic classes since they're in first grade. And all he asked them was, how many people here have experience with the Hebrew language? And they didn't raise their hand. So they don't even view it like they're learning any Hebrew, which I think I just wanted to bring out your point. You know, sometimes you have to sometimes tell the kids how much they learn, show them, celebrate with them that what they know. They don't even appreciate what they know. These guys have been learning their Hebrew language for 14 years, but they think they have no experience with Hebrew language. Can you imagine? You take a kid who was, you know, who went to some, you know, barely Hebrew day school, Talmud Torah, who had spent 20 minutes twice a week learning Hebrew. These guys could like be their rebbeim, muvuks, and these guys think they have no experience learning Hebrew, and to show them like, you know, a little bit more, this is what you'll get, you know, after that. That's why it's kedai to learn the malacha of how to talk to kids, so that kids will listen. You speak their language. That wow, I'm gonna be able to do that. That's very exciting. Okay, Matan, what did your group come up with?
Kesher. With the Rebbe, because if you have a kesher with the Rebbe, you get inspired by him and you want to emulate him, and by that you do what the Rebbe does, and assuming that's learning and everything that comes with it.
Okay, we were discussing this. I want to give Matan the credit for this, because he was thinking, and he said that he thinks that if you develop a kesher with the Rebbe, so. Okay, it may not help for that particular next davening, but that will keep a kid on to the derech. I want to just tell you a ma'aseh shehaya that happened. There was one kid once who was a 10th grader in our school many moons ago, but it was this building. It was not this building. It was the old building. And he was squarely something wrong with him. He was a bright kid, but... It was turned off, or not with it, not with the program. And I remember this being taught to me, just make a kesher with him. So I said, okay, I'm going to make a kesher with him. So I tried going over to talk to him. He wasn't willing to talk. How are you? Good. So I said, okay, I wasn't getting anywhere. So I said, I'm going to make a seder with him. So I'm pretty sure I was... the assistant principal then. I was not the principal. So I made a seder to learn with him once a week. I think Mondays at 3:00, I used to take him out of math class or English class, and I learned with him. The first 7 weeks, he couldn't read. I took out, I don't know, Masilas Shemar, so they gave him and we would learn. And he was a 10th grader. I had no experience. I didn't know what I was doing, really. And I was learning with him. And I used to ask questions, he gave me one word answers. So I couldn't get anything out of him. After about 7 weeks, like the 8th week when I sat down with him, he said, can I ask you a question? I said, yeah. And then we didn't open another the safe for the rest of the year. And I got so close with this boy that he eventually did go off the derech, just like, you know, he did go off the derech. And I'm the only frum person, other than his siblings, I speak to his parents, They said, Rabbi Palgan, you're the only person that he calls. So he was on a, bid, you know, thing. I have no idea why. But he still calls me. I still speak to him. So, I'm just saying a kolshke, like, you know, okay, in that case, there was something severe going on. Something going on. I don't know what it was, but like, wow, he still calls me. It was many, many years later. I'm still in touch with him. And, you know, I speak to him, you know, I say once a year, once every other year. I speak to him. I get regards from people, and he gets regards from me. And, you know, I'm sure he's going to marry a Jewish girl if he gets married. I'm sure of it. I don't know if she'll be, but I don't know. But you never know. Okay, that's not the highest of aspirations, but, you know, that was an unusual case. But if you can figure out how to make a connection, I don't have it here, but do I? I do have it here. At least I won't copy here. I'll give you one thing I got from out of the corner, which is precious to me.
Belonging, belonging, competence, love, freedom, will be fun. Will be fun? No.
You do fun.
I can do that.
This is my St. Louis notebook.
I have here, if you want, I can make copies for you. He used to give a graduate class. This will end. He used to give a graduate class, and his graduate students, he forgot he gave me this. I showed this to him last year. So this is awesome. Where'd you get this from? So I said, Rabbi Foreman, you gave it to me about 15 years ago. So it has on here 19 ways to make personal connections with kids. From LaMarshall, number one. Collect personal index cards. At the beginning of the year, many teachers give out index cards and ask the student to fill out many personal items on it so they can know the student. Include their birthdays, you can send home birthday cards. I mean, there's simple things. Smile and say good morning. It goes a long way. Keep pictures of your family and friends in class. Not meant by Rebbe's, like, you know. There are some great ideas that you just wouldn't naturally think of all them yourselves. It has on here academic connections, 18 academic connections. For example, respond positively to wrong answers. When a student gives an answer that you aren't looking for, it's a good idea to say almost or good try. Students feel like they aren't that far away. That's what you were saying, Shmuel. They weren't that far away. And offer think time for questions so they don't have to just blurt out answers that don't make sense. Show that mistakes are okay. And then he has here social connections. 16 ways to have social connections. I could give you one thing I did, which used to do. If he did it to you, I apologize that you were, he had this right, Durovitz. He did it. Do the 2-10. What's 2-10? Find a student who needs his self-esteem built and make a commitment for 2 minutes a day for 10 days to build the relationship with the student. It will help you communicate with the student better, and it will give the extra push you need. And that much works. You spend 2 minutes a day for 10 days. No, privately. 2 minutes, but you know, you have to prepare, because what are you speak about? For 2 minutes is a long time, you know, if he gives you a one-word answer. So you have to figure...
10 days,
yeah. 10 days does the trick. So if anyone wants to come over to me, I'll make a copy for you.
Can I scan it?